incredible diversity. Grasses, forbs, legumes, and shrubs all live and thrive in harmony with each other. Think of what each of these species has to offer. Some have shallow roots, some deep, some fibrous, some tap. Some are high carbon, some are low carbon, some are legumes. Each of them plays a role in maintaining soil health. Diversity enhances ecosystem function. Number 4, living roots. Maintain a living root in soil as long as possible throughout the year. Take a walk in the spring and you will see green plants poking their way through the last of the snow. Follow the same path in late fall or early winter and you will still see green, growing plants, which is a sign of living roots. Those living roots are feeding soil biology by providing its basic food source, carbon. This biology, in turn, fuels the nutrient cycle that feeds plants. Where I live in central North Dakota, we typically get our last spring frost around mid-May and our first fall frost around mid-September. I used to think those 120 days were my whole growing season. How wrong I was. We now plant fall-seeded biennials that continue growing into early winter and break dormancy earlier in the spring, thus feeding soil organisms at a time when cropland used to lie idle. Number 5, integrated animals. Nature does not function without animals. It is that simple. Integrating livestock onto an operation provides many benefits. The major benefit is that the grazing of plants stimulates the plants to pump more carbon into the soil. This drives nutrient cycling by feeding biology. Of course, it also has a major positive impact on climate change by cycling more carbon out of the atmosphere and putting it into the soil. And if you want a healthy, functioning ecosystem on your farm or ranch, you must provide a home and habitat for not only farm animals, but also pollinators, predator insects, earthworms, and all of the microbiology that drive ecosystem function. Throughout this book, I return to these principles over and over again. I even devote a chapter, Chapter 7, to discussing their importance in depth. They are ingrained in everything I do on my ranch. It is my hope that, by the time you finish listening to this book, you will not only know them by heart, but you will want to take advantage of them to regenerate your ecosystem, too. This is the journey of dirt to soil. Part 1. The Journey. 1. Lessons Learned the Hard Way. How did a guy who grew up in the city, whose only contact with growing plants was mowing lawns during the summer, become so committed to soil health and land regeneration? It's a question I sometimes ask myself as I consider all that land regeneration has blessed me with. I grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota, the third of four sons born to a father who had a lifelong career with the local rural electric cooperative, and a mother whose main job was to keep four boys out of trouble. My childhood was relatively uneventful, involving a great deal of baseball, bowling, and homework, but not much exposure to agriculture, except for a few brief trips to an uncle's farm. That all changed in the ninth grade when I took a class in vocational agriculture, inspired by an older brother, Jay. Soon after, I joined the Future Farmers of America and quickly became infatuated with all things related to farming and ranching. I wanted to learn everything I could, which in those days meant the where, why, and how of fertilizers, pesticides, insecticides, fungicides, artificial insemination, feedlots, balancing rations, diesel engines, and anything else related to industrial agriculture production. During high school, I spent after-school hours picking rocks out of cropland fields for a local farmer, which is not an uncommon thing to do in North Dakota. This was the first time I had actually worked on a farm, and despite the rocks, I loved it. Little did I know that farmer would soon become my father-in-law. My sweetheart, Shelley, and I were married in 1981. My